The Punch Brothers are an acoustic band with a unique sound that defies most descriptors. They've been gaining plenty of attempts, though, as they gain attention. Two members of the group, Chris Teeley and Noam Pokelny, spoke with me before their appearance at the Elnora Guitar Festival about solo projects, in Pokelny's case, coming back to play after graduating from the U of I, and how they would describe that sound. Chris Teeley speaks first.
I think that Punch Brothers, first and foremost, weren't an acoustic band. We're not plugging in. And the reason for that is that it's just not what we know the best. I think we're holding our palette, you know, staring at this blank canvas, and we want to make sure that we know exactly what colors we have to work with. And I think, you know, electric instruments, things like that, it's just not, those are very mysterious colors to us, and we're not sure that we can get what we want to get onto that blank canvas with those colors, whereas with bluegrass instrumentation, banjo, guitar, bass, fiddle, and mandolin, those are colors that we understand fairly well, and though they're maybe most commonly associated with the music of Bill Monroe and Flatten Scruggs and traditional bluegrass, I think we feel like we can make just about anything that we can imagine. So I'd say that that's sort of the overall tone of Punch Brothers. It's this bluegrass instrumentation, but not necessarily in the service of propagating the beautiful tradition of bluegrass, but rather we do attempt to emulate the spirit of the creators of bluegrass music who, they were freestyling. They were coming up with new stuff. We would like to do the same.
And you've mentioned, Chris, that you don't feel like the process of putting together a record is complete until you perform those songs to an audience. What makes performing so important to you?
I feel like it validates things a little bit. For instance, when you deliver a song and you look out into a crowd and there are people who you can tell that they know this song, I just can't even begin to express what a validating experience that is. That you've made this thing, you make things for people. I think being alive is, you want to just make things for people. You want to offer people something to make their day a little bit better. And to look out into an audience of people and see that this or that song has found some purchase in someone's life, that is sort of complete the cycle for me.
Shall we hear a song?
Awesome, yes.
Maybe Little Lights.
Little Lights, that's good. Right. Yeah, do Little Lights.
All right.
Singing the phosphorescent pinks and blues, to beloved tunes, in beloved rooms I can love it all to destruction.
Very cool. So your band name, the Punch Brothers, it's a kind of interesting one. Where did you come up with it?
Everything under the sun was being tried out as a band name after our initial idea was quite rightly rejected by the label.
We should just point out, there wasn't anything criminal about the original band name that we had. It was just, it was laden with puns. We were very briefly called the Tensions Mountain Boys. We were so proud of ourselves, and the label told us that it wouldn't stand the test of time.
We had a song called Punch Bowl on our first record that was called a Punch Brothers record. And so, Pickles, I remember you saying, well, what about Punch Bowl? And that reminded me of this Mark Twain short story, Punch Brothers Punch. And I blurted that out, and that fight eventually won out.
Well, I'm glad it did. You've said that your newest album, The Phosphorescent Blues, which you worked on with T-Bone Burnett, addresses the power and pitfalls of our super digitally connected era. What made you decide on that theme?
That's another thing that happened over kind of a long period of time. We started working on the material several years ago, and usually in our material, the music leads the way, and I might start sort of mumbling lyrics to melodies that we're coming up with, and eventually something will come out that maybe one of the other boys feels like, hey, you know what, that's not bad, what does that mean? And so maybe I'll start running with that. But we've been talking about technology's impact on the way that we interact and the depth of connections that we forge. And it seemed like a good idea to try and write about it, not in any necessarily very negative way, but just in a this is how things are and how are we going to deal with it.
And you know, it's an interesting experience for us as a five-piece band that's intensely collaborative. But Chris is the lyricist of the band. He's always been the lyricist. But we've always found it important to make sure we're on the same page as far as the content. Not necessarily rubber stamping what he has, but having a conversation about what's going on in our lives. And I think we were all experiencing something similar as far as watching the way technology was having an impact on our friends and on us. And I think Chris was seeing this detachment that was running rampant as people were seemingly more interconnected, whereas my experience maybe was more of just a frustration that by this point in my life, I didn't have more Twitter followers.
And Noam, you went here to the U of I for school, originally for engineering?
Yes, I set out to make very expensive things, or at least things that would be more widely consumed than acoustic original music. I've settled on making something a little bit more boutique than a computer.
What is it like for you to come back and do shows here? Is it different at all because you've spent so much time here and there's so many students from your alma mater in the audience? Or is it kind of a normal show, if there is one?
You know, it's an interesting experience. We've played so many places over the last decade, Punch Brothers, and then beforehand, before Punch Brothers, I played a lot of places. But Champaign-Urbana hasn't been one of the regular stops. And so for me, it's a thrill to come back with a project I'm so proud of to play in Cranard. It's such a beautiful sounding room, and I have really fond memories of seeing some great music there. And, you know, coming back to Cranard, it's a joy to play there with a project that's been so rewarding. It'll probably solidify the awe that I feel to how little we can actually control and how little we can actually predict and see down the road.
You all have healthy solo careers outside of Punch Brothers. Is that something that's particularly important to you, to work a lot together and then go off and do your own thing?
I think it's become increasingly important as the band matures, and I think we were all more or less happy to pursue Punch Brothers fairly doggedly initially, but as I said, a lot of hours under our belts with the project, and I think that, I guess maybe 3-4 years ago after the touring behind Who's Feeling Young Now for a long, long time, we realized that we needed a break. It had been maybe 5 or 6 years of dense Punch Brothers activity, squeezing any other musical interests into very small cracks. And I think we kept doing things, and we did have an eye towards the material that would be Phosphorescent Blues, but it was much more sporadic and gave us time away from the band. And when we got back and did, you know, more dense Punch Brothers touring, I think it helped us appreciate what a unique project it is and what an opportunity it is for the five of us to make some nice things for people, hopefully, to the point where now I think we know that, at least for the foreseeable future, Punch Brothers is going to be a part of what the five of us are up to. It doesn't have to be always the biggest part.
And yeah, I'm going to listen to Punch Brothers continually while I drive for Uber.
Well, I'm glad to hear that we will be getting much more Punch Brothers music. On the notion of solo careers, though, I know you're tired of talking about it for the time being, Chris, but as a public radio station that airs a Prairie Home Companion, I have to ask you about taking over for Garrison Keillor.
Garrison and I would give it the old college try. Details are still being ironed out. I grew up listening to the show. I mean, some of my earliest memories are hearing Garrison tell stories and you know, these wonderful fake commercials. you know, probably my earliest experiences with the mandolin would be hearing Peter Ostrushko, Jethro Burns, et cetera, on the show. And the way that Garrison entertains the crowd, I was really taken by as a very young man. So the show is immensely important to me, and when Garrison asked if I would be interested in hosting after he's done, I was thrilled beyond belief, and I think it could be a wonderful opportunity, and rest assured I will do my best not to screw the show up.
Well, we look forward to seeing where it goes with you. Before we go out with one of your original songs, I'm interested to know how you pick the covers you do. It's a large mix of different types of songs. Is there a trend?
Hey, well, we're obviously covering music that we enjoy, and that it's music that's fun for us to play, but I don't think it's just that. I think we've gravitated towards picking songs that we thought maybe we could present it in a different light, that there was something that we could do a little bit differently about it that would be cool, and that the process of learning how the existing version came to be, how the parts work, and how we could find those parts on our instruments, it would be educational for us, but the process of kind of changing things around so we could put it in our own voice would possibly make it something more than just a bluegrass or acoustic facsimile or something. And so it's always been something, I think, just out of sheer admiration for the song, and so, or whether it's the song or the arrangement or just the attitude of it, something that we wanted to get inside. But I think we always thought that it has to hold up on its own, that if somebody doesn't know this cover and comes to a Punch Brothers show, it can't be lost on them. Otherwise, it would be just, you know, self-indulgent, except to the people in the audience who are already Strokes fans or Claude Debussy heads, if that's what they call them.
Very cool. Well, thank you very, very much. Shall we go out with one of your songs?
Sure.
What do you think? Maybe Julep?
That was the one I was going to suggest. Perfect.
Song, actually, it's rare that the first thing you hear is also actually the first thing that we heard of a song. Mm-hmm. You know, often the kernel from which a song sort of buried deep in the middle of the song somewhere. But in this case, this bass line that Julep starts with, that's the first thing any of us heard.
Eventually, everybody wreaked havoc on it. But I do think it's interesting that this was really started and launched far, far away from home in Brussels, ended up being a song about such a quintessential American drink or Southern drink. And so I think at that time we had been touring for so long that we may not have known it, but we were either one, very homesick, or two, very thirsty.
Yeah, let's hear Julep.
I died happy in my sleep. I died happy in my sleep. Our children around and you looking down from heaven's a julep on the porch. Heaven's a julep on the porch. You and me rocking the grandfather clock is tick, tick. Thank you. I died happy in my sleep. Our children are around and you looking down from heaven's a tulip on the porch. Heaven's a tulip. Tick, tick.